KMOX.
Listen anytime, anywhere.
Get the radio.com app today.
Would you walk us through a typical day?
Burger King, Wendy's, and McDonald's.
Stop spending!
I'm president, and you're not.
This is the greatest country in the world, but we do have some really stupid people representing it from time to time.
I am proud to shut down the government. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I don't think he's a smart person, but he's got a loud voice.
On KMOX.
Well, let's just start with something off the wall and goofy this afternoon as we get rolling on the Wednesday edition of the show. The headline here, deputies Spartanburg man charged with DUI sprayed Axe body spray into mouth to cover stench of alcohol. Every once in a while I get stories like this and I don't want to forget to do them. And my producer, Dave Klein, gave this to me, I think mainly because he's done this before in his own life where he sprayed Axe body spray in his mouth. Yeah, these guys get pulled over. This is in North Carolina. And I'm sorry, South Carolina, Spartanburg, South Carolina. Deputy makes the stop, driver and the passenger, drinking beer, they're speeding, swerving. Efren Mencia Ramirez, not to say that he is an illegal immigrant, however, he does not have a driver's license, so he perhaps could be, sprayed Axe body spray into his mouth to make the stench of the alcohol on his breath go away. I don't believe it worked. This guy, by the way, he blew a .15, so isn't that like half dead, pretty much? So he's got all kinds of charges. Driving without a license, no proof of insurance, open... I think it's just... That's just not right to charge this guy. I mean, he's probably here to make a better life for himself, and even if he didn't follow the rules on getting into this country, why pick on him for driving around and swerving and spraying Axe body spray into his mouth? I don't know why you would do that. So where to start this afternoon? Well, let me tell you this. First and foremost, if you miss any part of the show, you can always download the podcast at KMOX.com/Reardon. You can always listen live by downloading the radio.com app. And a couple of programming notes. Of course, we have the season opener tomorrow in Milwaukee at Miller Park. There will not be a rainout. I can guarantee, there's not a lot of things I can guarantee. I can guarantee no rain unless the roof doesn't retract, because they do have the retractable roof. I spent many an opening day freezing my cojones off in the parking lot of County Stadium and Miller Park. And we're going to check in with one of my friends up there from WTMJ, my old stomping grounds, Greg Matzik, who does sports for TMJ. And he doesn't much care for the Cardinals. They don't like us up there because they're jealous. But, you know, they've been pretty good. It's a good rivalry. So we'll get into that in the next hour. John Cass is going to join me. I love John Cass. He's one of my favorite columnists, libertarian columnist for the Chicago Tribune, works on WGN Radio, too, and he's been all over the Jussie Smollett case and the connecting of the dots. I didn't get into the connecting of the dots with Michelle Obama too much yesterday because I wasn't completely buttoned up on that, but he's got some good information, and some of this plays into the mayor's race up there as well. Admittedly, though, it is a little confusing just because Rahm Emanuel, I think I mentioned Rahm in connection with the Clintons, forgetting that now that's way long time ago. He was chief of staff for President Obama. So you would think if he's tight with the Obamas that this would be something he'd be looped in with, but apparently wasn't. So Cass coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Let me spend a little bit of time here with my friend AOC, because I've heard a little coverage of this. You know, you had the vote in the Senate on the Green New Deal, and you didn't have any Democrats voting for it. They think it's just a stunt. Katie Turr was on with Mazie Hirono. Mazie Hirono represents the island state of Hawaii, where you'd have to take, I think, a little paddle boat or something like that, a canoe, to get there for your vacation under the Green New Deal. Now, Katie Turr, no conservative we might want to toss in there, no unbiased, she's certainly biased, but I was surprised here.
On the Green New Deal, there was a procedural motion today. Why did so many Democrats vote present on it instead of voting yes for it?
Because this was just a sham
so-called debate by Mitch McConnell. He wanted to divide the Democrats. And the bottom line is that the Green New Deal is an aspirational document that says we recognize the science behind climate change, unlike Trump and the Republicans and all of the climate deniers who want to stick their heads in the sand.
Let me remind you of some of the settled science that I went over yesterday with the report that came out last week that one of the biggest receding glaciers in Greenland is actually growing again. And they wrote about this in one of the scientific journals, and the scientists admitted it's a bit of a head scratcher. They're encouraged by it. Wow, look at that. Some of these things aren't happening the way we predicted. That's the settled science. Keep that in mind.
And make believe that climate change is not happening. And all of the growing number of natural disasters that are taking people's lives and costing our cities, our businesses, our people billions of dollars, which, by the way, even as we speak, we are going to be dealing with the disaster relief package. Because of all of these many, many disasters, natural disasters that are hitting us more frequently and with greater impact.
She doesn't know what she's talking. Look, it's just not true. Now, look, we're not seeing an increase. We're certainly not seeing an increase in hurricanes. Are we seeing an increase in the intensity of hurricanes? Well, we can maybe talk about that and debate about that. Are we seeing an increase in the damage caused by hurricanes? Well, yeah, we are. And that's pretty easy to explain. It's the same way we've always explained, or I've always explained, the increased damage from tornadoes. You have more houses. You have more property. You have more buildings in a greater vast area of land than we used to have. So, of course, you're going to have some of that. But this whole notion that we certainly have not had more tornadoes, we have not had more hurricanes, so they keep repeating these things. It would be nice every once in a while if somebody, just one person, would challenge them on those ridiculous claims. So Katie Turr actually does say this.
Isn't that an argument that you just made to vote yes for it? I mean, McConnell may be trying to make it a show vote, but you signed on to this, you're one of the co-authors of it.
Yes.
If you believe that this is something that, even if it's aspirational, that needs to get done, why not take a stand and vote yes for it? And here's what the Democrats stand for. We don't care that it's a show vote from Leader McConnell. It seems like you're trying to have it both ways, not be hung by it politically, but also not say that you don't support it.
I disagree with you, Katie, that why should we engage in the kind of sham shenanigans that Mitch McConnell is really good at?
Well, go on the record, Maisie. Go on the record and tell people what you really believe. Don't shy away from it. You know, they all say this is basically the party line has been, well, these are important things. And even if this is a little wacky and extreme, we still have to be talking about this because our lives are on the line, which is another lie, basically. I just think it's irresponsible, and it's certainly irresponsible of MSNBC, CNN, I don't care who, basically feeds into the frenzy here. You have to have some semblance of a conversation about what's happening now compared to what might happen later. And let's let Sean Duffy. Sean Duffy's from Wisconsin. He's a congressman. He was on the floor of the U.S. House yesterday, and he makes this point, and I want to kind of launch off this.
I think we should not focus on the rich, wealthy elites who will look at this and go, I love it because I've got big money in the bank. Everyone should do this. We should all sign on to it. But if you're a poor family just trying to make ends meet, it's a horrible idea. It's kind of like saying, I'll sign on to the Green New Deal, but I'll take a private jet from D.C. to California. A private jet. Or I'll take my Uber SUV. I won't take the train. Or I'll go to Davos and fly my private jet. The hypocrisy.
AOC did not like that one at all.
This is not an elitist issue. This is a quality of life issue. You want to tell people that their concern and their desire for clean air and clean water is elitist? Tell that to the kids in the South Bronx, which are suffering from the highest rates of childhood asthma in the country. Tell that to the families in Flint, whose kids have their blood is ascending in lead levels. Their brains are damaged for the rest of their lives. Call them elitist. You're telling them that those kids are trying to get on a plane to Davos? People are dying. They are dying.
I'm so confused by so much of that because, well, first of all, I don't know, and I know that the Green New Deal involves a little bit more than climate change, but I'm not sure what the situation in Michigan had to do with any of that. Some people made some really, really bad mistakes and hopefully are being punished for that right now. That's a terrible situation. Who in the world would advocate for something like that to continue? But when it comes to the other things that she's talking about, I mean, it's just nonsense, really. And she's talking about people. Let me just play this real quick again, because something that she said caught my attention.
This is not an elitist issue. This is a quality of life issue.
Oh, that's right. She was talking about my brain cramp there. She's talking about Brooklyn and the kids and the asthma. Well, look, I looked into that a little bit. That sounds terrible, right? Maybe we should look at cleaner air, because you have all these kids in one of the boroughs in New York that are suffering from asthma, and it's the worst asthma compared to other places. Well, here's the reason for that. You have, and some of this is very easy to explain. It's not unlike why we have more damage from tornadoes and hurricanes. Why would people in that area of New York have a higher instance kids, a higher instance of asthma? Is it maybe because you have adults in that area that have higher rates of smoking? Yeah, that's part of it. They've done studies on this. Is it maybe because you have, and this is gross, but it's true, in poor areas of New York and elsewhere, you have dirty air from mouse poop and stuff like that? They've actually done studies on these things. Science. Gotta believe in science, right? So I think that Katie Turr and CNN and everybody else has to be very careful, just like they should, or they do. They check, they fact check the Republicans all the time on these things, and they talk about the lies and the distortions and the exaggerations. Why won't they do that when it comes to AOC? Some people have. I think even some of the lefty journalists realize that she's out there, but she's good TV and she's ratings. And I think I use that to my benefit as well. Now, on that note, we've spent some time recently talking about the media, certainly in reaction to the Mueller report. Lance Morrow is going to join me here in a few minutes at 2:35, writing for the City Journal. He's a guy that's written a lot of stuff over the years for Time Magazine and Newsweek, and has been a journalist for a long time. And he's got some pretty strong opinions about where journalism is right now when it comes to the double standards, and really talks about the self-importance of journalism and how the media is operating right now. And that's coming up. The piece that caught my attention was journalism dies in self-importance. And he was citing Ted Koppel, because Ted Koppel sort of popped off on this as well, not unlike what Laura Logan did, former CBS News correspondent. And he was saying something along the lines, here's the quote, he said, "We are not the reservoir of objectivity that I think we were." And he wasn't talking about Fox News. He was talking about the Washington Post and the New York Times. So Lance is coming up. We'll have a conversation about that a little bit later this afternoon. John Cass coming up next. He's with the Chicago Tribune, does some radio on WGN. He's got the Chicago Way explanation. That's what he calls it, the Chicago Way. You know, the vote early and the vote often, the corruption up there. All of that on Jussie Smollett coming up next.
It's Mark Reardon now. Total Information PM starts at 4 with news, weather, traffic, and information you need on KMOX.
Just a reminder, we have a Reardon Roundtable coming up on Friday. I want to mention it now because it's very likely I will not be on the air at all tomorrow. The Roundtable brought to you by the Better Business Bureau. Jane Duker will be here, Greg Keller, and Jack Cardetti. So it should be a good one on Friday afternoon at 2. Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, is still very, very angry and confused about what happened yesterday with Jussie Smollett.
In the process of uncovering whether a hate crime happened, they found out it was a hoax, which they stood by yesterday, the state's attorney's office. The person that committed that hoax is walking around saying, "I'm innocent, and everything I said is true." I would like a resolution and a sense of accountability and responsibility in the system of who is right. How did we get to a situation that with nobody's knowledge, one of the cases that people watched, not just here in the city but around the country, of somebody that pulled a hoax, how do we get to a situation done?
Well, so that's the thing that's amazing, is you had, and I can play some audio a little later, where the state's attorney in Chicago is basically saying, no, we're not exonerating him. This guy is, Maggots is his name.
We stand behind the CPD's investigation in this case, the great work, the tremendous work that they did in investigating this case. We stand behind the decision to charge Mr. Smollett and to indict him.
Is he innocent?
Do you consider him innocent?
No. This was not an exoneration.
I mean, okay. So Rahm's point is They say it's not an exoneration. Jussie steps up to the mic, says, well, I've been telling the truth the whole time. John Cass is a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, joining me this afternoon, one of my favorite columnists on the planet. John, you like the sucking up there a little bit?
Yes. It never happens to me, though.
Well, but I do like your work. You've known that. I've retweeted you over the years many times. So, you know, what is your take right now, John, on where this is? Because it's been very confusing.
Where this is if you're Kim Fox, for your listeners, I wouldn't anticipate Kim Fox being the next senator from Illinois after Dick Durbin decides he and his wife have made enough money and it's time to go. I don't think she's doing herself a favor. She's hurting her political career, and it's opened up a can of worms, and it kind of smells like that mud on the edge of the Chicago River in March, you know, and it's kind of marchy and musky. Yeah.
So
not a good smell.
I did not know that. And this is, I think this is helpful for those of us down here in the southern part of Illinois and in Missouri. But so Kim Fox has political ambitions that take her potentially to a U.S. Senate run. I was unaware of that.
I think talk to every politician in Illinois and they've got ambition.
That's right.
That's what they have. Right. I remember there was a young politician in St. Louis who had ambition once. Yeah, so there are many politicians with ambition.
So when it comes to the influence that may have been undertaken at the state's attorney's office, what do you know, because Michelle Obama's name gets tossed out there, an aide to Michelle Obama, what's the connection there? I guess the question would be, is there a connection there?
Yeah, several weeks ago I wrote a column about it. And Kim Fox, who's the prosecutor in the Smollett case, received a communication from Tina Chen. And Tina Chen is the former chief of staff for Michelle Obama. And she's also a friend of Amy Ruhl, who's Rahm Emanuel's wife.
So
Tina Chen contacts Fox on behalf of Jussie Smollett, and asks if Fox can intercede.
Yeah, you kind of call this Obama celebrity friends, right?
Yeah, isn't that the game?
Yeah, it sounds like it's the game. That's for sure.
And then she starts texting. The column was called "Kim Fox's Embarrassing OMG Moment" in the Jussie Smollett case. She starts texting back and forth and emailing, and then contacts the family, and she's basically trying to get, this is when they still think Jussie Smollett is legit, and that those evil police detectives or somebody in the police department is leaking information they don't like. So they want to push it to the FBI. I guess, I don't know who's going to handle that case. Andrew McCabe or Strzok or Lisa Page or somebody. And they want to push it to the FBI and have Eddie Johnson drop the Smollett case. And that didn't work because Eddie Johnson, the superintendent of police in Chicago, said, no, I'm keeping this case. And they basically came up with a lot of information, as you know. Jussie Smollett, the two guys screaming, Make America Great Again, screaming the Trump insults, were two Nigerian bodybuilders. Okay, they weren't MAGA. They went and bought MAGA hats at a hardware store. They couldn't even find MAGA hats in Chicago, so they bought red hats.
And by the way, if they would have really been beating on Jussie Smollett the way that a real attacker would have, they would have squished him like a little grape, I think.
Listen, he gets into a fight with these two bodybuilders with abs of steel. And he has a cell phone in one hand and his foot-long tuna fish sandwich in the other, right?
That's right.
How many guys do you know have a fight with two, menacing bodybuilders screaming MAGA at you and you keep your tuna fish sandwich intact? I don't know what kind of planet that is.
Well, it was probably a $5 foot-long, so he wanted to make sure that he hung on to that deal. Because it was Subway. So what you've often referred to this, and I think even people here in St. Louis, they know Chicago has a reputation for corruption. You call it the Chicago way. Do you think that there's going to be any repercussions for Kim Fox in that office after this?
What are they going to do? Call in Michelle Obama as a witness?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, I mean, really, Kim Fox did this thing because, you know, she talked to Tina Chen because Michelle Obama is her lawyer. I mean, it's she cleaned this up. She bathed. Kim Fox bathed Jesse Smollett in the waters of the Chicago Way. And this is the town that we live in, and we're neighbors to you. Illinois is right on the edge of Missouri, and I hope you like our neighborliness.
Okay, but here's the part that's a little confusing to me, because, look, Rahm Emanuel used to work with the Obamas. He was chief of staff. He knows the Obamas very well. He was pissed yesterday. I actually couldn't believe how angry he was.
Kind of worried me. He was so, like, sincere, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that was about. I know that he is very precise in his language, and so for Obama,
Rahm
to say use the word whitewash like 5, 6, 7 times, that was by design, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And the other thing is, you've got Kim Fox as the protege of the boss of Cook County, the political boss of Cook County, Tony Preckwinkle. You know, even the left can have a boss. And Preckwinkle's running against Lori Lightfoot, two African-American women running for mayor of Chicago. And this is becoming an issue in the Chicago mayoral race.
That's interesting.
Because Kim Fox is the protege of Tony Preckwinkle.
You know, John, one of the things I tweeted yesterday I found interesting, that this is one of those events that brought people together on Twitter. I mean, I was rather encouraged. In other words, I saw outrage and loud outrage on both the left and the right about this whole thing.
About Smollett?
Yeah.
Yeah, although I've heard, you know, mixed signals from the left, because you have Jesse Smollett, African-American, gay. There's, you know, on the level of the intersexual ladder as it goes up, you know, intersection of politics, he's a double, triple minority or something, and usually protected by the Democratic
That's
Party.
True.
And I find this, I don't see the outrage. And remember, he accused Trump supporters. This could very well have turned into a race riot, you know. I mean, if you have the, you know, if the proper dynamics were in place. I mean, this was not a good thing to start accusing a city and a group of people of violence against and hate crimes when you're holding that tuna fish sandwich and making yourself a star.
I think that's why Rahm was so mad, and Eddie Johnson as well. It's an interesting story. John Cass, who is up at the Chicago Tribune, does a podcast also called The Chicago Way. Interestingly enough, you can find that at WGNradio.com. John, always great to have you on down here in St. Louis. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man.
All right,
thank
take
you
care.
For having me.
See you, John.
See you, buddy.
John Cass with the Chicago Tribune with us this afternoon, and it is a baffling situation. We'll continue to follow it, and I certainly have some more audio tape as we move through this afternoon as well. Let's go Blues!
Hey, Blues fans, Joey Vitale here, and the Blues are heading to the Concrete Jungle to battle the New York Rangers in the first game of a back-to-back.
It's the Blues and Rangers Friday night.
Pre-game show starts at 5:30, and the puck drops at 6, right here on your home for Blues hockey, KMOX. Let's go!
Well, in the aftermath of the Mueller report, and Adam Schiff is out there today doubling down, talking about collusion, even though there's no, you know, evidence of collusion. It doesn't seem to matter. And how will the CNNs and the New York Times and the Washington Post of the world handle these stories moving forward? Lance Morrow is with me this afternoon, longtime columnist for Time Magazine and other publications. He wrote in the City Journal this week with a piece about journalism dying in self-importance. And I do think that where the media is at right now in this country, especially with this president, is an important discussion. Lance, how are you?
Good. Good. Thank you.
Well, this is, your column was great, and you quoted Ted Koppel, who said, "We are not the reservoir of objectivity that I think we were." And he's not talking about Fox News there, right? He's talking about the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Yeah. He was specifically, he was talking about those two newspapers, the Washington Post and the New York Times, and he was speaking of them primarily, I think, in the context of the Russia collusion ongoing story.
So where are we with journalism these days? Look, I've been citing bias in the media for decades now, and I've never seen it rise to this level. And having said that, I'm not the biggest fan of a lot of the things that Donald Trump does. But I do think that you've had big news organizations that have decided, and this is part of the point that you're making here, that this guy is bad for America, and that's what they're basing their reporting on.
Yeah, it's larger than Trump, of course, but Trump has kind of crystallized and galvanized this this change in the media that Ted Koppel was talking about. I think it's extraordinary what's become of the major news organizations like the Washington Post and the New York Times and the cable channels and the network news. It's a huge change, and many people speak of the death of journalism. I don't. That's a little melodramatic, but it will be very, very interesting to see how the behavior and the attitudes of the Washington Post and the New York Times and other news organizations will change as a result of the crisis brought on by the Mueller report, which has so discredited a lot of the reporting that's gone on for the last couple of years. But the situation of the media is very, very different now from what it was, for example, when I grew up in the business a long time ago. When I was a kid on the Washington Star and a couple of other newspapers, if I used adverbs and adjectives and colorful language that characterized the facts, I would be called by the city editor up, and he would have thought about firing me, but he certainly would have warned me very strongly, saying, you know, who do you think you are? It is not your job to, you are not a participant, you are a witness, you are a reporter, you just give the facts. And the facts had people in the business had a real working kind of reverence for facts. Not that they always got it right, or not that it was a golden age of journalism or anything like that. But today, the facts take a secondary position to the opinions and ideology. The country is absolutely overcome by ideological arguments about this and that, or, you know, identity politics, and all the so many issues that are basically ideological, and they become political. And then in journalism, there's so much opinion mongering. So,
well, and, you know, would you agree with this statement? It sometimes, and this is what I've pointed out over the past, the bias isn't only something that is apparent from the words that are on the paper, the the things that people say on the radio or TV. But sometimes what's not included is also, I think, an indicator of bias. And I think that a lot of the, you know, I would use, this is just me, you know, we don't have to get into the politics of climate change, but I would agree, or I would say at least, that on climate change in particular, the reporting is extremely one-sided when we're told that the science is settled. And there are voices out there that are sane voices that present different perspectives. And these are people that don't deny that the climate is changing or that there is warming going on, but they have a different perspective. But you never hear from those people.
Well, exactly. And it's not only on climate change, it's on many, many issues. I mean, one of the disheartening things that's going on is that I've been in this business for a long, long time, and many, many years at Time Magazine. And if you collect the staff of the Washington Post or the New York Times or Time Magazine or MSNBC, and you get them in a room and you list a series of issues, whether it's abortion, gay marriage, gun rights, immigration, whatever, I absolutely guarantee you that you will have a virtual consensus on the staff on those issues. Well, that's not very healthy. I mean, that it makes for a certain arrogance. It makes for a certain blindness to the other side. I mean, that's the thing that really troubles me, is an increasing incapacity to imagine that the other side may have a point, that may have something to say. I mean, I agree with you about Trump, basically. I mean, he makes some things about him are, I think he's doing okay, but some things make me
yeah,
upset.
Right.
But nevertheless, half the country voted for the guy, and you know, and he's very likely, he may well be reelected.
Sure.
Partly because of this Trump Mueller thing, but the incapacity of the journalists to understand that there's another point of view is very disturbing to me. There's something missing in their circuitry. They just, as journalists, you know, it wasn't installed in their software to understand that there are more things in heaven and earth than they happen to have thought of, and then are part of their orthodoxy.
You know, I think it would be helpful. I've said this, and I think other people have suggested, there's a big disconnect between New York, Washington, D.C., L.A., and where I am right now in St. Louis, Missouri,
and going
outside of St. Louis. So the people who are reporting on the news on a regular basis, and I can't say that this is, you know, true with 100% of them, but they've never met people who are law-abiding gun owners that live in rural areas, that
right.
hunt and fish, right. that do things, that go to church every weekend. Some of these things that really were it's a condescending attitude that comes from
right.
a lot of the elite yeah. media. And that's the part that I think bothers folks around here.
Yeah, I completely 100% agree with you. I think that they it's a failure of imagination and of experience. And and there's a certain arrogance. If you talk to the same with people of the same opinion and you're sort of in the same bubble, you just don't understand, as you say, things that are going on that are not on the coasts, that are not in L.A. or New York or Washington. And this is a big a lesson that I learned some 30 years ago. Time magazine sent me over to Israel and the West Bank and Gaza it was the 40th anniversary of Israel. And so I spent days and weeks going up to the West Bank, Ramallah and Nablus and places like that, and then to Gaza and Gaza City, and talking to Palestinians, just endless interviews of filling notebooks after notebooks. And then I would go over to Israel and to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and elsewhere, and I would fill notebooks and notebooks of their life stories and their attitudes. And then, of course, they were two different universes, but I understood both of those universes, and I sympathized with both of those universes, and I understood why they felt the way they did. I understood, and that's what a journalist is supposed to do. I'm certainly not an ideal journalist, but a journalist is supposed to have a sympathetic understanding of different modes of thinking,
right.
of different opinions. You know what I mean? And so. And I find that is gets lost now in this very dogmatic, ideological nonsense that afflicts some of the biggest.
Completely agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to get into a conversation about putting the genie back in the bottle. I don't even know if that's possible, but we're out of time. Lance, thank you so much. And I love the piece. And, you know, I think there have been several people that have come forward with these same concerns lately. But
yeah.
I just hope people are listening, right? Laura Logan, for
yeah.
example. You might have heard Laura Logan and what she said in that podcast a month
ago. Absolutely.
Yeah, which
absolutely.
Was right on point, right?
Right, absolutely, absolutely.
Lance Morrow, thank you so much. I wish I could go on, but my boss is going to kill me for going late on time, so I appreciate it.
Okay, great to talk to you.
Local news from St. Louis's News, Traffic and Weather Station, KMOX.
This yesterday, I have this segment I do with my friends at PNC Bank called C-Speak. You might hear it during the morning segment at 7:19. And there was a guest that we had for that a few weeks ago, Eric Drucker, who's a principal at Booz Allen Hamilton. And he's the director of data services and artificial intelligence. I learned a lot from him that day. You have a story that came out this week about Walmart using AI, and there's all these different implications of artificial intelligence in the future. And by the way, in the very near future, and Eric's going to come in and talk about it. I think it's going to be real interesting. My my buddy Greg Matzik, who is a host at WTMJ in Milwaukee, my old stomping grounds, talking about the home opener for the Brewers against the Cards tomorrow. I thought we'd check in with the folks up north there at Miller Park. A couple of things that I wanted to touch on just briefly here before the end of the hour. This story goes back a couple of days, but I'm confused by it. And I guess you have some of the same things that are playing out with Jussie Smollett when it comes to sentencing. And this is the story. It's about the guy who toppled more than 100 headstones at the Jewish cemetery 2 years ago. He was drunk. He was on drugs. Of course, that became a big story. And you remember, my wife went over there. Eric Greitens had the, remember him? He used to be governor. He used to be a friend of mine. I haven't talked to him in a long time. Just completely, he has not returned my calls or anything like that, which is a little disappointing. But anyway, he went over there. Eric was Jewish, and he took a stand, and we thought it was anti-Semitism. It was not. They finally found this guy in April of last year because they matched DNA. And they're saying, I guess, because it was not a hate crime, that they let him off and he gets probation. That's it. He toppled 120 gravestones, and he did it because he was all drunk and on drugs. But I just think that he's got to pay $5,000 in restitution, maintain full-time work, take an anger management course, and not contact the victim. I guess the victim would be the cemetery. Is that enough? Is that a good punishment for that? I'm thinking maybe a little shock time, about 15 days. Just like Jussie Smollett. You think anyone would have been upset if the prosecutors cut that deal with him, announced ahead of time what they were doing? Because look, I don't think he was going to spend any time behind bars anyway, but they could have had some other things in association with that resolution yesterday that would have been better. Joe Biden, this is what we're going to hear, I guess. If you are a white candidate for president like Beta or Joe Biden, you have to express guilt for being white. You're not going to have success in the Democratic field with the diversity that they have and will have if you're a white guy. White dudes are not cool right now. If you're white and you're a man, not cool. I wish I wasn't. I wish I was not a white man. It was something else at this point. But I can't, well, maybe I can change it though. Can I just say I'm something else? Isn't that how it works? I'll think about that. I don't know which one I want to be yet. But here's Biden expressing, this is kind of two parts. He talks about Anita Hill because, gosh, that's a big thing for him to confront. Uncle Joe is on the wrong side of that when it comes to the Me Too movement.
When Anita Hill came to testify, she faced a committee that didn't fully understand what the hell it was all about. To this day, I regret I couldn't come up with a way to get her the kind of hearing she deserved.
All right, so that is not what caught my attention. This did.
No man has a right to chastise his woman with a rod thicker than the circumference of his thumb. This is English jurisprudential culture. A white man's culture. It's got to change. We all have an obligation to do nothing less than change the culture in this country.
Yeah, we got to change. I'm not sure exactly how men beating on their, I know he was, quoting old law, but how is that a white person's problem, beating on your wife or your girlfriend? I'm a little confused by that. But thank you, Uncle Joe, for being guilty as a white dude, because we don't want any of that. Can't have white guys ruling America, that's for sure. Speaking of white guys, Michael Avenatti, it's very interesting to listen to the tone of the porn star lawyer from St. Louis in this interview with Jerika Duncan from CBS News. It's the first interview that he's done since his arrest on charges of wire fraud and extortion. There's some tax issues here. So here's our friend from Parkway Central.
You're facing, if convicted on all of these charges, up to the rest of your life in prison. Are you nervous?
Well, of course I'm nervous.
Are you scared? Are you concerned? I mean, tell us, I guess, as someone who, again, has a history of representing people, and now you're on the other side, facing some serious charges.
I am nervous. I'm concerned. I'm scared.
But you also seem confident.
I am confident because I believe the facts are on my side.
What about the case in California? You've been charged with wire fraud, bank fraud. There were comments, in that complaint saying you did embezzle $1.6 million from a client you represented.
The client who is accusing me of embezzlement is currently on felony probation in California. You know what he was convicted of? Multiple counts of obtaining money under false pretenses. It turns out, and I didn't know this at the time, that he has an extensive criminal background and rap sheet.
There is a difference in tone, though, isn't there? He's a little bit more mild-mannered, not quite as amped up, right? Wasn't he going to run for president? Didn't he also predict that the president would be behind bars on Twitter? I saw some things that may come back to haunt Michael Avenatti.
Prosecutors are saying that you committed extortion, that you committed wire fraud and bank fraud in California. Did you try to extort Nike for millions of dollars?
No, and any suggestion is absolutely absurd. Nike knew from the very first moment that I had any contact with Nike that I was insisting that the truth about what Nike had done be disclosed to federal prosecutors and investigators.
What is the truth?
The truth is, for years, Nike and its executives have been funneling payments to amateur players, high school players, and to their handlers and family members in an effort to get them to go to colleges that were Nike colleges and ultimately, hopefully, to the NBA so they could sign a shoe deal with Nike.
Well, he actually may be onto something there, but I did notice a change in tone with Michael Avenatti. A little unusual, too, because we're seeing people lawyer up left and right, including St. Louis County Executive Steve Stanger, basically saying, I can't comment on this, I can't comment on that. Michael Avenatti, who I don't know if he's representing himself, he's really not. He's not afraid to say what's on his mind, but with a little different edge, I think. Total Information PM coming up at 4. We have the second hour of this show next on KMOX.